a party to you.
Samsonite. I was way off.
Hold on to your butts.
What's up, heroes, and welcome to the Stephen Corson Show, where we discuss financial strategies, habits, and mindset to get you to your first 100K and then get you to your first million, all in the pursuit of true wealth and modern freedom.
All right, I'm excited to be talking to my LinkedIn buddy, Michael Pyle. We are constantly going back and forth on each other's comments and talking about different things, and we've had a great time just going over a lot of different topics today. So I wanted to have him on the podcast. Michael, thanks for joining me, man. How's it going?
Yeah, good, Stephen. No, I appreciate you reaching out and setting this up. It's always fun to talk to somebody that's also interested about money. So yeah, looking forward to diving in on really any topic you have for me today.
So. No, I got a couple different things I want to pick your brain on. So the thing I like about Michael is that he agrees with a lot of things, but he'll give a dissenting opinion every once in a while, even if it's wrong. You know, that's okay. But, you know, it's nice to have people who like to think that I don't have all the answers. So, because clearly I don't, guys. So, no, it's always a ton of fun. Unlike some people, big names out there, we'll actually talk about him a little later. I don't go banning people on my social media for having dissenting opinions. So, a little plug to get us in. So, for today, just so everybody has a little bit of an idea, you know, I want to talk a little bit to Michael. He has a really fascinating journey. Professionally, about kind of where he's come from. I talk about this all the time about how a job is a job is a job. Your work is not your family. He is here to bring some evidence to that and why that is true. And then, you know, we want to talk about a couple other things. We had a couple interesting differing opinions on, you know, questions you should ask your CFP. Should you listen to somebody who doesn't have the same net worth as you? Dave Ramsey. So we're just going to kind of see where it takes us all along that line. But Michael, why don't you just start just sharing a little bit about, you know, past couple of years professionally, you know, how you kind of came to be where you are today?
Yeah. So I ever since I graduated college, I've been in a sales role. Mostly my time has been spent in software sales.
And how long has that been?
What's that?
About how long have you been doing that?
A little over a decade.
A little over a decade. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, growing up, my dad was in healthcare sales, and that was something that I always thought, you know, hey, makes good money. He had, you know, some fun stories to tell. So I just thought, hey, like, just like a lot of people probably, you know, want to be like my dad. So got into it. And after a few years, I realized, I was like, man, I'm getting kind of jaded with this. And that was also around the same time that, you know, the guy that we'll talk about here shortly, Dave Ramsey, where my dad introduced me to him. You know, I was driving a lot on the road and got me interested in personal finance. I had some debt myself. And, you know, fast forward a few years, I got married. My wife and I knocked out, you know, roughly $70,000 in debt in about a year and a half. So that was kind of the start of it, I guess, of getting really interested in personal finance. And then after some time, I realized, I was like, you know, Dave's great for getting out of debt, but there's got to be more. And so I just, you know, I did a lot more digging and found some things. And long story short, I ended up getting a master's degree in personal financial planning. And
oh, wow. Okay. What university did you go through?
The best university out there, Kansas State University out of Manhattan, Kansas, the Little Apple.
Hey, you know what? I got no beef with Kansas State. I'll let you guys have that one. That's fine. UF, the Gators, we don't even have one of those programs. So at least we got one.
It's funny because I didn't even know about the program while I was there for my undergrad. I didn't know a lot. In my undergrad, I screwed around and got a terrible GPA and hated school. So it's just funny that, you know, for a couple years straight, I found myself on their website trying to figure out, do I want to get a master's in financial planning? Cause I can tell I'm interested in it. And then when COVID hit March, 2020, everything shut down. And I told my wife, I was like, this is it. This is the thing I needed to kind of catapult into the next stage of my career. So, yeah, it was a 2-year program. So I just finished up the summer of 2022, and then passed my securities license in November. And then
nice. Congratulations.
So yeah, it was good. It was, yeah. So, I mean, right after that, at that point, I was like, all right, I'm going to submit paperwork because I want to start my own registered investment advisory firm. So I own my own firm. It sounds cool, but it's small at this point. But really, I looked at a bunch of places and, you know, do I join another firm? Do I not? And my values and kind of what I wanted to do and how I envisioned it. It was just the only thing I could see as being the best possibility was starting my own thing. So that's what I did.
Well, okay. So that gets into a really interesting question that I get all the time. And that is, how do you know that you're ready to start your own thing? Right. This question comes up all the time. Sometimes it comes up in the concept of a side hustle. More often than not, it's somebody who wants to take a shot on kind of a dream job. Maybe they've developed their ikigai and they're like, man, this is purpose. I'd love to figure out a way to monetize my passion, whatever the case is. So, and maybe this gets a little bit into the job thing. Maybe it doesn't, with what happened to you previously, but like, what was the process that you went through in order to go from, I have a nice, stable 9-to-5 sales job, and now I want to go full time into the world of entrepreneurship, and God knows what my income will end up being for better or for worse. Like that's a big lifestyle and mental shift even. So how did you kind of get there? Was your hand forced? Were you heading that way all along? Did both those things happen? How'd you get there?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this could probably last hours, so I'll try to convince you.
The majority of your life for me in 3 minutes, if you can.
I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. I don't know what it is, but I'm the second child in my family. You know how second born are usually, they usually don't follow the rules as much. They tend to just, not follow the same path that everybody else does. And, when I was,
my parents would have said that was the first four of their children, but yeah, you're right. The second one tends to do that. You know who you are, Brandon.
So, I mean, to answer your first question, I think how I decided, a few things on the business was really about just sitting down and thinking for a little bit rather than having society tell me what to do. I kind of thought, what do I want to do? What do I want my days to look like?
And love that.
With all the kids, I have three kids with one on the way due in July. So once you have kids, it really sets a different mindset, right? So it's like, yeah, I want to be around. I want to be present. I want to, sales is a great gig and I've made better money than I ever thought possible. I'm not near as good as, a lot of people, but good enough for me. But there was never anything where I went home that day and was like, man, like that just felt so fulfilling. And so work with people one-on-one, with a passion, financial planning, that's something that I love talking about. You don't have to pay me to do it. I want you to pay me, but you don't have, it's like, I could talk for free and enjoy it. And so, just kind of thinking through what do I want my future to look like? And it wasn't surrounded by, oodles and oodles of money and making sale after sale. It was more around, going home at night and knowing I made a dent into somebody's personal life. I always relate it back to, I was a recruitment chairman in my fraternity, and my fraternity was known for really good grades. I was not part of that, known for good grades.
Don't know many of those.
I know it was an odd fraternity. It was, but they made really
good chugging. Grades. Yes. Getting good grades. Not so much.
Yeah. We were a little bit out of the norm, but, I was part of the norm of, I got pretty crappy grades, but my joke was always, I may not get good grades, but I will recruit others that can and will. And it's kind of the same thing with financial planning. It's like, I know I'm not, going to build a rocket ship and go to NASA. I know I'm not the smartest person in the world, but what I want is to be able to find people that do have just some things that I will never have. And I want them to be able to be so comfortable with money that they can take the leap into entrepreneurship or just have a little bit of space in between their paycheck, and their lifestyle that they want to live. And man, they could do some really cool stuff. So to me, it's almost like more interesting to know what other people have and what they could potentially have versus what does it provide me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And I mean, I tell people this all the time. I'm like, listen, obviously I have my courses. They're very much for people who are trying to, do money themselves and different things like that. But I tell everybody all the time, I'm like, listen, if that's not working for you, if you can't do the self-guided stuff and figure it out for your own, maybe you just real, like my wife, for instance, money personality wise, she is, you know, what you would call an indifferent to money. She just does not care one way or the other, doesn't want to spend any time on it. Well, for anybody who's like that and they don't really want to do it and taking a course, you know, by somebody isn't really going to change anything, that's fine. They need to work with somebody like you, somebody who's a CFP, because it's better to be paying somebody for advice, you know, for something as important as this to set you up for the rest of your life. And it's important to be doing it sooner than later, because time, as we know, is one of the best assets you have until you don't have a lot of it. And then it becomes the enemy in some situations. So yeah, I love exactly what you're talking about. And that's where, you know, I tell people, I'm like, listen, I was like, there is so much that you can do. If you don't want to do it yourself, that's fine. There's people that do a great job taking care of things for you. And honestly, you're a fool if you're not paying attention. So it's great.
Yeah. And I think the more I kind of studied personal finance, you still with me?
Nope. Still with you.
Okay. The more I've kind of studied things around the personal finance thing, I think everyone, you know, the first comment everyone makes when I say, you know, I'm a financial planner is like, oh, what should I invest in? And what I've learned is, you know, investing is important, but it's 10% of your, you know, your whole financial picture. There's so many other details about it. And the biggest one is behavioral, the emotional side of finances. And that's what I find really fascinating. I took extra classes during my master's program that highlighted the kind of the behavioral aspects of personal finance, just because there's so many things that we want to do good with our money, but wanting and actually doing are completely different. And I think that's where I want to have an impact as a financial planner. Yes, sure, I want you to be able to, you know, make a lot of money and have your investments get great returns. But I want to be able to help you along your journey, to your point around, you know, the behavioral aspect of money. Cause there's a lot of things that can divert the journey into a path that you don't want, especially if you don't, you know, if you don't actually plan and kind of prep for that.
Yeah. It's the truth. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm like, listen, I can teach you how to be a millionaire in 30 minutes. It's not that hard. I could probably show you a couple different ways how to do it in 30 minutes. So if I can do that and it's that easy for me to explain, then why aren't there more millionaires? It's like, oh, by the way, the majority of the information that I would probably share with you, you can find online. So yeah, if knowledge is no longer the problem when it comes to making money, well, then that leaves us with behavior and psychology and different things like that. So yeah, to your point exactly, it's one of those things to where it's like, yeah, there's a 20% knowledge gap that needs to be filled. Probably some, you know, things that you heard from an uncle or a parent, like keep your money under your mattress, your house is the best investment you can make. Like, you know, some old time, you know, for lack of a better term, we could call them wives' tales about money at this point that you may need to unlearn. And then outside of that and learning a couple basics, it really comes down to the execution with your behavior. That's pretty much it.
And the biggest behavior is the want to do it in the first place.
Right. The actual desire. You need a strong why.
Right. And to know that, okay, I will take action after this, because everybody wants to be better with money, sure. But like to actually take the step to doing that, right? To whether it's sitting down and actually physically writing out a budget, whether it's sitting down with a financial planner and kind of divulging your financial, I mean, whatever it is, actually moving forward with the actual action, not just the, oh, I plan to do this at some point. Everybody plans to do something, but people's lives get busy, kids get sick, you know, parents need extra support, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of things. So to me, I felt most comfortable and confident in my life when I have additional savings in the bank, when my wife and I are on the same page with our spending, you know, just the basics of money that you like, just like you teach, it's like, you've got to get good with the basics, and then we can kind of level up here and there and kind of get better at the margins, if you will, you know, later on as we continue to learn and educate.
So in doing this, what do you find is one of the most common, what's one of the most common emotional mistakes that you find that people are making with money?
Doing nothing. It comes down to my sales background, really. You know,
completely.
It's not, you know, I'm friends with a lot of financial planners. I've never once looked at any of them and go, that's my competition. It's not. The competition is getting people to actually take action. Because think about it. Sales, in my career in sales, we've all been taught, well, you got to create the pain, got to create the urgency with somebody. It's really true. You only move forward with something for the most part. If one of two things is happening, either you're in an episode of growth where you truly, like I said, you want to go out and you want to learn and take action, mm-hmm. or you're going through pain. Maybe you overspent again this month. Maybe your tax bill was massive and you're like, okay, well, there's something that's got to give. And a lot of times people are okay with just the status quo until all of a sudden you're age 60 and then you're like, oh crap, I don't really have anything for retirement savings.
Right.
I don't really want to work. My health may be deteriorating. Like there's nothing that, you know, at age 30 that's really giving you that sense of urgency. So my hope is that for folks that are interested, do take action, but then also, you know, making maybe a bad experience and turn it into a positive one, meaning, you know, maybe you've got a parent that's, you know, in their low 60s and they always said, oh, I'm just always going to work, and they get sick and you see that and you go, oh shoot, like I thought they would always work and right. now they have no savings. And now like, is that going to be me? Oh, maybe I should get some help. And so just something that kind of like kickstart the process of thinking about your future.
Yeah, we always use the term FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You want to drive those three things in order to create change. And one thing that I find is always really interesting, you learn a lot about this in behavioral psychology. I actually, you know, been through counseling a couple different times, various times in my life for different things. And this is a recurring thing that tends to come up. But one of the best emotions that will drive change is actually anger. So it's like, if you can get a person who's actually upset about their situation, it's one of the best change agents that you can have in order to drive a new type of behavior. Because at the end of the day, any type of growth, no matter what it is, the desired outcome has to be greater than the pain of change to attain it. And that's a really important thing. I want six-pack abs. But do I want six-pack abs enough to give up having pizza a couple times a week? Not that bad. So it's like, I can want something, but at the same time, I can also want something that even if I know it's not as good for me, I can want that more. So until I have the knowledge and the idea, now if somebody comes to me and says, okay, maybe it doesn't justify six-pack abs for me. But then if somebody comes to me and says, hey, Steven, you're 300 pounds overweight, and you're going to die of a heart attack here in the next 3 months if you don't stop eating pizza. Guess what? I'm pretty motivated now. the pain of that will drive behavior change at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where, you know, it's very similar in the financial world and what we're doing. It's like, you know, and this is where I see a lot of financial programs falling short, because they focus so much on the numbers. Like, let's focus on the net worth. How do we get you to that $1 million? How do we get you to $500,000, whatever it is? And it's like, yeah, everybody wants to be worth $1 million and have that in the bank. But is it worth giving up certain things that are making me comfortable right now and the behavior changes I'm going to have to make in order to attain it?
Yep.
The reality is, for 92% of the population that aren't millionaires, it's not.
No, you're spot on. And it's ironic. You know, I didn't tell my story I've always planned to be a financial planner, but I kind of got forced into full-time financial planning a couple months back. So I passed my licensing exam. I put in paperwork to get my RIA up and running, and I knew it was going to take 8 to 12 weeks. So I was like, I'm going to start marketing myself on LinkedIn. So I started writing about,
so this is all while you have a job.
What's that? Yes. Yeah. So okay. This is while I have a software sales job. And I want to work with salespeople. That's the group I know. And going back to the emotional and behavioral aspects of finance. And I get it, man. Like I know what it's like having a quota. I know what it's like not hitting quota or exceeding it, having a huge paycheck one day. There's a lot of things that.
Yeah, you make $8,000 a month and then you have a huge Q4. All of a sudden you get a $50,000 check and it's like, oh gosh, well, what do I do with this?
So. And I saw so many things that were like, it just, I wish people would, you know as specifically salespeople, we can make a lot of money. We can also spend a lot of money, and I'm fine with spending, but just spending on things that you value and think through and, spending intelligently. So I started marketing myself to salespeople, and I thought, well, what better way to market myself and kind of build that initial trust on these strangers on the internet that don't know me. So I started talking about, certain things that how I had been mistreated in sales, whether it's not being paid out a commission, certain things changing from the interview process to when you get onboarded. And, not to say I'm some sort of, glutton for likes and comments, but I know that usually drives more attention. And, so that was, the goal was to drive attention to, hey, like I'm right with you. Unfortunately got the attention of some people at a partner of ours in our company. I blocked everybody in my company thinking, well, I've done a good job. I've exceeded quota. Worst case scenario, if they do find out I'm starting a financial planning firm, it'll be a slap on the wrist. Hey, don't do that.
That makes sense. Yeah. You'd think.
So fast forward a couple of weeks after I started marketing myself, and the boss pulls me in and says, yeah, unfortunately you're gone. So we don't want, that kind of look with our company. And I said, even though it doesn't impact my work, I've exceeded quota both years I've been here. I'm most likely going to exceed it again this year. And it didn't matter. I get it. It was a business move. They, they don't want to bite the hand that feeds. So I don't dislike anybody that's there. It's just, that's the corporate culture. And to be honest, it's kind of funny because me talking about kind of the corporate culture, the toxicity that I've gone through, that almost kind of fueled the fire even more. I'm like, so you're going to let me go because I want to start my own business for the betterment of me and my family. And you're going to let me go because of why, like, because I've exceeded all your expectations of me. Like it fueled the fire. And so my plan all along was to become a financial planner. I just wasn't going to do it full time until I had a few more years worth of savings and my wife could go back to work full time after being primarily a stay-at-home mom, because that was our plan A was stay at home with the kiddos until they're, in kindergarten. So my wife, without skipping a beat, when I told her I got let go, it was really tough. And she just said, that's fine. I'll get another job. Like I'll work more hours, no big deal. And it was just, it's like, man, if you have a partner, if you have somebody in your life that's like that, I mean, it was just another level that I didn't even realize she had. So I owe it to her to be able to just, she's 32 weeks pregnant now. It's like, she just got to, went back to work basically full time a few weeks ago.
Women are amazing. There's no doubt about it.
People, I joke around, like men and women aren't equals. Like females are so much better than men. Like there's no question. Like people are like,
"Have you ever seen a guy get a cold? And have you ever seen a woman get a cold?" are two different experiences that are happening at the same time.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah. It's the truth, man. Now I think it's interesting because you see all the data nowadays, right? Marriage is in decline. Interestingly enough, divorce is actually in decline. A lot of that, I think, has to do with the fact that people are getting married later. And then when they do, they're much more settled in their life and they kind of have the same, directions and all that. So, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons that go into it. But I think that it's interesting, even though there's less marriages, the ones that are happening are staying together statistically longer. But the other statistic that continues to be true, more so even that now, as the cost of everything continues to go up, and you see that married couples are out earning couples who are not married but are together. So like cohabitating couples, right? Mm-hmm. They are out earning them over, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong on the time frame on this. I remember it's 77%. I think I want to say over like 20 years or something. Like it's significant amount. And I find it such a interesting, we're at a very interesting cultural inflection point when it comes to this stuff, right? Because, there's this element to where it really is a battle of the sexes, I think. And there is the narrative out there to where, you'll see it on, some of the social media reels and all that. And, men hating and all this other stuff by women. And, it's like, listen, I know I'm not saying all feminists hate men or anything like that, but there's a section of them that absolutely do. And they're very outspoken about it. And, I think it's interesting to where when you just look at like what defines a successful life, if you could pick one thing, to me, it's the fact that it's longevity. Like, how long do you live? I think if you put all factors together, right, it's like, hey, if you live a long time, you were doing something right. And it's interesting to me that, you know, happiness put aside, it doesn't matter. Couples who stay together, you know, in their marriages live longer than everybody else, both the men and the women. So I think it's a super underrated thing right now that's happening in our culture, to where marriage is really getting crapped on. And then at the same time, it's the data is becoming so glaringly obvious that, wow, there's really something to this about the betterment of both people when you do this right. You know what I mean? So, you know, I say all that to say, I'm teeing up a question here for you. You know, in your personal experience, because I know what the numbers say, but I want to share this with people. In your personal experience going through this right now, because I think the dynamic between you and your wife, it's like, listen, you were going hard for a couple of years. You had your role. She had her own role. Now those roles are shifting again. They may shift back eventually, all that. How long have you guys been married now?
Be 7 years here in July.
Okay. And how long have you been together? You've been married 7 years. How long have you been together?
About a little over nine.
Okay, great. So almost a decade together. How have you, what's the advice, I guess, that you would give to other people who are in a long-term relationship, that are married, considering to get married, whatever the case may be? And it's like, hey, this is one of the things that has actually contributed to our financial success, right? Outside of everything else, just focus on the financial. This has contributed to our financial success when we have had to change and adjust and be flexible with our dynamics as the world around us has changed. What are some pieces of advice you would give around that?
This is going to sound odd, but agree to go to marriage counseling.
Oh, I like that one.
Before you even get married.
Okay. Because I think premarital counseling. Yeah.
And not quite. Premarital, yes. But
well, just before you get married, like you said. Yeah.
Agree to go to counseling. Agree to the understanding that you will probably need counseling throughout your marriage, because things change, like things that you don't see. And here's the easiest example: kids. And I'll use a personal example. This is very recent, right? So this is a couple months ago. It's the beginning of the year. I got let go, and I realized that the last couple of years we've had, you know, at one point we had three kids within a little over three year time frame.
So our world changed. COVID babies.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, babies. Our world changed big time. Right. So it's like, you know, it's like you're, even when you're maybe not necessarily married, but you're just dating. And then when you get married and you don't have kids, still kind of that same process. Mm-hmm. Like for me, getting married wasn't a huge difference than not being married, other than, you know, the official marriage license and the Mr. and Mrs. But having kids, that was a big, big change. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can plan that you are going to need help, as we all do with big changes like that, like nobody can train you. Like there's no other, aside from some books, like people don't know how to be a parent until they become one. And it's the same thing with a spouse, like being a husband or a wife and parent at the same time. Like there's all the books in the world that can tell you certain things. Half of them are written by people that don't have kids or aren't married. Right. You know, but it's like, so being able to have somebody guide you, like a couple months ago, you know, when I lost my job, I realized, you know, by making, you know, decent money in the last couple of years, we had kind of neglected talking to each other about some things that we probably should have been talking about, and just being more open and communicative. And so I think we both agreed, you know, hey, let's get past this baby number four. But then as soon as we kind of get past that first, you know, the infant stage and everything, like, let's agree to go to marriage counseling and let's work on communicating better. And so I think if you can take the stigma away before it even has a chance to enter, and just agree to go when that, not if, but when that opportunity comes.
I love that. That's such a great dynamic.
So,
and I think another great thing too for people is like, treat it like you would a personal fitness trainer and be like, hey, you know, I'm trying to get to an intended result. I'm going to sign up for a personal fitness trainer for 90 days. And then after 90 days, I'll see if I need them any longer or not. Because I think there's also the stigma of like, well, once you start counseling, you're just in counseling in perpetuity. And it's like, no, it's like you can go to counseling for literally anything and, you know, do it for a couple of weeks, couple months, work out an issue and then leave and come back. But like you said, going through big life changes like that, just having a unbiased person, you know, providing wisdom into your lives with the things that you're going through, pointing things out on both of you, sometimes balancing the scales, communication can get fuzzy between you sometime if there's tension. I mean, it's like, it's invaluable. So I love that advice. That's a great piece.
Yeah. I didn't have that planned, but when you asked it, I was like, I try to
catch people off guard, man. And you handled it. What you handled it. Great. That was a fantastic answer. I think me and my wife, we've done counseling after kind of the same stage you are. You know, we had our son and then we had twin daughters and it was, you know, she had postpartum depression, a whole bunch of stuff that we had to deal with. And it was, we did counseling for a year. It was like, we kind of went back through it and it was like, man, it was just the past 4 years. It was like three children had been born, a global pandemic had to happen, wrecking our careers and, you know, different things we had to do there. There had been three job changes between the two of us. It was like so much had happened that we hadn't even like really, like we were together hand in hand, but I mean, we were holding on for dear God life. And it was just like, whoa, like relax the grip a little bit, slow down you two. And like, you've been through a lot the past couple of years, you know, so had some family, you know, get really sick, mom had cancer. I mean, it was a lot. So yeah, I think that, you know, diving into counseling, setting that expectation, even when you're dating of like, hey, do you have anything against, like if we ever need to get into counseling for something and like just doing it, it's incredibly healthy, very beneficial. And, you know, I always find it interesting. It's like, if you have a business, a lot of times we'll call in consultants or freelancers to come in and help us with stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're on a nutritional journey. You might get a nutritionist or a personal trainer or somebody to teach you how to cook healthy food, bringing in an outside source to help you get something better. Finances, go to a CFP, you seek out advice, courses, whatever it is. So why is it when it comes to our mental health and our emotional well-being, we have such a stigma about the same thing when we'll do it for literally any other aspect of our life?
It's true. I don't have a good answer. Yeah. There's, you know, we could make assumptions.
We're on that forever. I know. Well, yeah. Good. Well, I want to get to this. I know we got a couple minutes left and, you know, one thing I want to ask you is as a CFP coming into it, I think you and I had talked about it, Dave Ramsey, for whatever reason, he's been around forever, but we both tend to agree that recently it feels like there's been a resurgence of a resistance to some of the things that he, you know, has talked about. And to Dave's credit, he hasn't changed anything. And also, I think that's one of his downfalls. He literally hasn't changed any of his advice in 30 years. I tell people all the time, I'm like, listen, if you came to me for video advice and said, hey, how do you make videos? And I gave you advice from 30 years ago and said, well, you get this big camcorder with a VHS tape. You're going to slide it in the top here. Then you're going to stick it in your eye in this thing. And you're barely going to be able to see anything. You're going to spin it around and have a tiny view of vision. Nobody's going to listen to me, right? So it's like, well, that's what he's still doing in certain elements of his advice. It hasn't really adapted much. So there's a lot of different things. There's a lot of dissenting opinions, even though every once in a while I will talk about him just so everybody knows, hey, Dave Ramsey, I don't have a huge issue with the guy or anything. He is the gateway drug to personal finance. He's something you start off with. It'll help you out. He's got some good things he talks about. I have differing opinions on others, but he has good things, good fundamentals. And then eventually you kind of graduate and you go, okay, baby step number 7, build wealth. That's kind of a really big thing we could dive really deeply into. And he just doesn't. So, you know, it's fine, you know, nothing against it. But I am curious, you know, from a CFP perspective, you are going to have people come to you who have been with Dave Ramsey and they're going to make claims like, hey, how are you going to get me 14 to 15% year-over-year returns like Dave Ramsey says you can get? And you're going to go, where the heck is he getting 14% year-over-year for 30 years? And trust me, I've asked and I've been blocked on every single one of his social medias for asking. So if anybody ever figures it out, let me know because I want to invest in it too. But I'm curious, you know, in general, what are your thoughts on Dave Ramsey? Do you love him? Do you can't stand him? You in between on him? What do you think?
I'll use the my wisdom for my sales days, and it's follow the money, right? Like
I like that. I think,
what is Dave? Dave is he's an entertainer first and foremost. He's got one of the top three talk shows in the nation. I mean, he's
probably, yeah, I don't know the stats, but he's been doing it forever. He's got a huge following for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't say certain things. Let me,
and he's got that rich uncle feel to him, you know, where it's just like everything. He just spits these little Tennesseeisms off like butter. And it's like, you know, I'm from the South. We love a good, we love a good saying. And it's like, I'm more nervous than a long tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. You know, it's like,
yep.
It's like, who doesn't love to hear stuff like that? So yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, when I was working a job that I was driving all the time, you know, a 3-hour Dave Ramsey talk show like that filled time and made it entertaining on the way. And it, and I think he does a really good job of staying with the motivation to do it. Right. So think of that, maybe the couple that maybe they're only making 80 or 90,000, but they're in $60,000 worth of debt. Mm-hmm. Hearing other people's stories, I think that's really impactful, because it's almost like that you have like a little bit of an online community, even if you've never met the individuals. Because
right, really good point.
People are like me, and I think it helps to stay on the same track, and you do pick up things, you know, good advice from time to time on his show. I think, but that's where it stops, right? I think he's got a really good niche. It's the folks, you know, if I had to put them in a kind of a bucket, it would be the single or married folks that are, you know, anywhere from, you know, 50 to 100K. They're in, you know, 50 to 80, 80,000 worth of debt, a lot of student loans, car payments. And they just don't, they're just kind of out of control. Like he says, I think people, those types of people are perfect for him, because he kind of gets after you and kind of gets the fire lit up under your butt. I mean, some people need that, and some people just enjoy listening to it. So I think from there, though, for me at least, it was, okay, well, I'm out of debt now other than my mortgage. Like, live and give is great, but that's super vague. And like, what else can I do? And that was, you know, I stumbled across the financial independence community at that point, because I, you know, I started digging and finding things. And that was when it was like the biggest aha moment I've ever had with money is like, okay, I don't have to retire at 65. I can retire as soon as I have.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Cover expenses. And that to me was bigger than any Dave Ramsey thing. So, I mean, not to knock him. I just, there's a lot more out there. I think once, if you want to, you know, do some digging, you'll find it.
Yeah. And look, you got a lot of people to where, you know, the whole putting money away for your kids, college fund, like that doesn't even apply to a lot of people. I mean, you're 22 years old coming out of college. You can just skip that one. So, you know, there's a lot of people. It's like, well, that just doesn't mean anything to me. Or for, you know, if you're older and kids are pretty much done and they're 16, 17, it's like, well, it's too late to start now. So yeah, I totally agree with that. Now, if there was one thing you're like, I just wish you would stop saying this, like one thing, it's like of all the things, I just wish you would stop saying this. Like, what would that be?
Gosh, that's a good question. I don't know if this would be my answer if I had time to think about it, but this is the answer I'm going with right now.
Good disclaimer.
And it's the, you know, stop invest all investing, even if it's like a free 401k match.
Oh yes.
To disclaimer this, you know, this is not personal financial advice. This is
right. It's not blanket advice across the board, but I know what you're saying.
But I mean, if you think about it, like you could take the free match and even pull it out at the end of the year and take the penalty. Absolutely. And you're still going to, like, a penalty on free money is still free money at the end of the day. Right.
So you're getting 100% return. It's a match.
Yeah, just throw that money into your existing debt, you know? Right. So
it's a great point. Actually, I've never actually even thought about it in that person. It's like, okay, so you're going to take a 10% penalty, but you're making 100% guaranteed return. So that's 90% you're still netting every year on that. That's one of the best investments you can ever make.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying to do this.
Not everybody should just go do this.
You got to be very careful.
That people should be aware of.
Yeah. It's just, again, it's, and I named my firm Challenge Everything Financial. And it took me a long time to name, and it's probably still a crappy name to some, but for me, it was like,
the contrarian in me really likes it. I want you to know that.
I love it just because it was like, once I started kind of thinking for myself, instead of what does society tell me, or what does a big media, you know, Dave Ramsey type person tell me, like, let me think about it and use my own brain and just like take a second and hop off that hamster wheel that we're all on and just think a little bit. And man, it's funny, when you think a little bit, you actually start realizing there's a lot of power to that. And so that's kind of what I want to give to people is after they meet with me, it's like, I want to give you power to be able to be like, wow, I could do this or that. And I didn't even realize that was possible. So, I mean, yeah, again, I think Dave is great. I think, you know, of course he's going to have his naysayers, and I'm certainly one of them in certain aspects, but you know, for what he offers to, I think what I'm pretty sure what his niche clientele is, we all have our you know, our niche clientele, right? So it's not applicable. Then yeah, it's
wrong with that at all. And yeah, for me, I look at it and I just go, you know, I've got a lot of things too. We could do a whole nother thing on that. And, you know, but the purpose of this isn't to ragtag on them necessarily. But like, for me, I think that Dave really caters to the old American dream, right? And the reality is, at least in my opinion, there's a new American dream. The old American dream was you worked at the same job for 40 years. You got the house with the little white picket fence. You had the 2.3 average kids. I don't know where the 0.3 comes from, but whatever. The numbers. So you have the 2.3 average kids and you got a car and, you know, you retire when you're 65, play a bunch of golf and you die, right? Like that was it. And guess what? You know who did that? My grandpa. And he lived that life and he did it. And he was a cop, retired with a couple million in the bank between the army and, you know, whatever pensions, when things were affordable, left his daughters some money. It was great. He was retired by 65, played golf the rest of his life till he died. Love you, Papa. But, you know, so that was awesome for him. Guess what? I can't replicate that playbook in this existing world that we're living in. It's just not going to happen. I have family members that are cops. They are not living the same life my grandpa was, even though they live in the same damn city that he did, basically, in the same state. And it's like, well, what changed? Well, what changed was, you know, property values have skyrocketed faster and they haven't kept, and wages haven't kept up. Inflation has continued to outpace wages and all these other things. So it's like, you know, people aren't getting pensions anymore standard. Staying with a job for longer than 5 years actually hurts your income potential other than helps you. I am a perfect example of this. Had a career for 10 years. I even knew I was lagging behind, but I was fine with it because I was doing the job on automatic, basically, or on autopilot. So I didn't have to think about it as easy. And then I was doing other stuff on the side. But there were people coming in, and this is when I knew I had to make a change. There was a girl that came in that got higher than me that single-handedly destroyed the gender gap wage that everyone wants to talk about. And she was making $90,000 more than I was doing the same job. Even though I had been a top performer every single year, it was just she came from a different region. She came from a higher paying job. She knew somebody and they gave her an outrageous TI. And the year that I made the top performing winner circle, she didn't even hit quota and I only made $5,000 more than she did. I mean, like it was wild. So it's like the world is just different now. And I think that if that's the old American dream, the new American dream is get to a point where you're financially independent and you have time to do whatever you want, you know, spend the money and the time on things that you actually deem that are important to you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, have enough money to where you'll be able to scale back when you get older. But if you need to, you can continue to work at something that you love because you've developed a skill to it for as long as you want, while having the balance of having family. Like to me, that's kind of where I feel people are going nowadays. I don't see people talking about retiring at 65 anymore. They may talk about taking retirement out, but they're like, well, I'm going to have to keep working. So I don't even really consider stopping them. I mean, is that kind of what you see, or how would you define the new American dream if you had to put it into, you know, a box?
I mean, I think you hit it on the head. I you know, and granted, maybe in my bubble of financial planners that I see regularly on social media, I do think, you know, in the creator economy and in the, you know, anybody can do anything with internet access. I mean, Justin Welch, I think most people know him. It's like he preaches daily. It's like, look, if you've got internet access and, you know, the desire to do something, like, you can do it. And that's something that my granddad, who worked at General Motors for 40 plus years, you know, he didn't have that opportunity. And I think he would have done exactly what you and I maybe, you know, gone out on his own and did some other things. I think a lot of our grandparents would have done the same thing if they would have had the opportunity that we have. So why not take advantage? And at the end of the day, here's what I know is when I'm 65 and you know, quote, retired, I will not be disappointed with myself for going out. And even though I could have gotten another sales job and just got back on the hamster wheel, my wife and I decided together, this is the time. And if I fail, I fail. But I don't think it'll be a failure. I think at worst case, it's a great learning experience. I've learned a ton in the last couple of months, and I look forward to, you know, what the next few decades has.
I love the mindset. I love the fact that you were able to work from the life that you want to have with your family and then create a plan, you know, reverse engineering that. I tell people all the time, I'm like, you have to have a strategy for life, and every good strategy, every good plan, it starts with the end in mind, not the beginning. So I think that's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, the thing I think that's going to be a really huge X factor, because not everybody should be an entrepreneur. Not, I say this all the time. Not everybody should strike out and do their own thing. Some people don't have the personality for it, and that is totally fine. Totally fine. Yep. Right. But there's a large population of the people that aren't entrepreneurs right now that totally could be. And I think the huge X factor that we're going to see over, honestly, at the rate it's going, probably the next 2 to 3 years, I think as you can continue to see this war going on between these corporations trying to get people back into the office that they made go work from home over the pandemic, that now don't want to go back into the office because they're like, why? I'm doing my job just fine from home. This is better for me. I'm enjoying this. I think that in corporations are primarily doing this because they need to justify the real estate investments that they've made that are now completely drawing them under. And that's a whole crisis coming in and of itself. But it's like, I think with the emergence of AI, AI is not new. It's been around. Artificial intelligence has been around for probably 2 decades, right? But the level that we have reached now with ChatGPT, all these other things, I follow this guy, Zane. I don't know if you follow him on LinkedIn. He has a blog called Superhuman, I believe. Superpower, Superhuman. Something like that.
Yep.
And all he does is keep people updated of new AI tools coming out. And I see a new a list of tools and names of companies that are coming out that are AI based, that are incredible what they can do. And they're popping up like daisies every freaking week. It's unbelievable. I just signed up for a video editing service. If you're watching a short on this right now, it's probably edited by that. And it's literally a service that it will go through long form video, find the sections that are good, like 60 seconds or less, create it bite size, put it into a format that I can customize and choose and spit it out for me to be disseminated. In it takes 5 minutes. Before, if I didn't want to do that myself, I would have had to go and hire a video editing service or a marketing firm, and they would have charged me, you know, $300 and, you know, whatever dollars to do this a month. And I wouldn't be able to get as many videos from them as I'm getting from this thing. Right. Now, I'll admit I've seen video editors do better quality than what this thing does, but for my purposes and what I'm doing, for 10% of the price,
yeah,
it's not even a question.
Sure. You know?
So I think the emergence of AI coupled with the fact that work from home is going to stay popular, it's going to go up, it's not going to go down. I think that is going to drive a flood of people like you and me into doing our own things and just figuring out what that is, because you can make money on the internet. It's amazing to me the people that I see in some of these communities I am, and I'm like, you built a $200,000 business on that? It's incredible.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's it. But Yeah, it's I want to give you the last word here, you know, up on time and everything. You know, any you know, parting thoughts on, you know, if you could give the world one piece of, I'll say financial advice, but it could be regarding emotions, behavior, whatever the case is. But it's like, hey, you've got the opportunity to get this message and let everybody hear this. It's the last thing that you'd be able to tell them about, you know, building wealth or whatever it is. What would that message be?
Yeah, not going to be near as good as if I had time to think about it. So I'm gonna just
putting people on the spot. It's unprepared. It's right off the bat.
I'm gonna bandwagon off what you ended with as far as getting, you know, out, people that are interested in entrepreneurship to be able to go out and create and build. But I would argue everybody should do something, because I think we as a society are so attached to our jobs as part of our identity. And to be able to have something to detach, there was a span when I got let go to when my financial planning firm was officially up and running. There was a 6-week span, and it was really tough because I no longer was, you know, that software sales guy, the guy that made money, the spouse that, you know, and I, you know, interestingly enough, even my old 20-year-old car that I drive, I found myself feeling embarrassed by it, which is really weird. I've always felt proud. I make so much money and I still drive a 20-year-old. And I was like, this is all has to do with me attaching my job status and my money status with my identity. And so detaching those things from yourself, I think, is hugely beneficial. And it's not easy, way easier said than done. But I think it's just important to have some sort of identity outside the workplace.
Oh, I love that. To sum up what you just said so beautifully, I like to say this all the time. Your net worth is not your self-worth.
Yeah.
It's such a good point. I know even for me, leaving the corporate world after 14 years, being a rock star there was an identity crisis I went through. So I totally agree with everything you said. I went through it myself. For everybody out there, yes, there is a lot to where we all need to really make sure that. And I think especially as Americans, we probably do this more than some other cultures, but it's like, hey, you're a lot more than your job. So, you know, if you got to change some things up, it's not a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Michael, thank you so much, man. This has been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, thanks for dropping some heat and some knowledge on the pod. And I have no doubt that everybody's going to enjoy this one.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate you having me.
No problem, Matt.